You're listening to Baltimoreans,
the home of the all-weather fan.
My name is Sam Dingman.
This is Alan Smith.
Let's get stupid.
Baltimoreans.
Hello, Baltimoreans.
I'll tell you what was very stupid indeed, Alan Smith. The attempt to gain hits off the Washington Nationals pitching staff. What a fool's errand.
We come to you tonight on Tuesday, May 7th, 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time, right after the Orioles wrapped up the first of a two-game stand in Washington, falling ignominiously to 23-12 on the season. But, and here's my thing, Sam, 5-9 all time while wearing the City Connect jerseys.
Ooh, is it that bad?
Have we had enough? Have we, as a nation, decided that maybe this is just not for us?
Well, I'm glad we're talking about this, Smith. I have long had conflicted feelings in my heart on this subject. And the reason is, I am aware that the actual Orioles perform very badly when they are wearing the actual City Connect uniforms. But when I wear my City Connect hat, they do very well. So I don't really know how to proceed here.
I think we need to draw a line in the sand between generally fun, off, interesting, alternate jerseys for we as the fans to consume, and those same things being put into game time situations. Because generally, I think by and large, the City Connect jerseys look okay if they are being worn by people around town. I kind of like the Washington Nationals jersey when I've seen it like on the hoof. But man, it looks so bad on the baseball players on the diamond.
The Nats one?
Like it doesn't, the Nats one.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
It doesn't look like anything. Like it doesn't look like a sports jersey. It doesn't look.
Same for the Mets. I went to a Mets game the other day and they were wearing the City Connects at home. It doesn't look like a sports jersey. Doesn't look like anything.
Yeah.
Looked like and this is a problem in sort of like alternate jerseys across the board. They're trying to do too much.
Mm.
They're trying to put too many patterns and interesting things where if you get up close to it and you see the like intricacies of what's happening. Tottenham had this away jersey, which like if you got up close to it, you could see that there was this map of all of North London subways happening underneath the like color palette. But like on the field,
right,
it just looks dirty.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my thing about the City Connects is, and I actually think the Orioles succeeded on this score from a design standpoint. I realize that they are cursed. I think if you're going to do a City Connect jersey, it should be full weird. It should be very strange. It should be unrecognizably the attire
different
of the team. And you should go really far with that. I think, and I don't like admitting this, but the best example is the Red Sox City Connect jerseys, which you look at them and you're like, what is that yellow, like sky blue? Like what is happening right now? That these are not the Red Sox. I think if you're going to have an alternate jersey, that should be the experience. I think the Orioles jersey and black pants has that going for it. The problem, maybe, Smith, is that the hat is a little too cool. The script B, it's just a cool hat. And
it's a cool hat.
Maybe
it
that's
has a
the
little
problem.
Bit of the design appeal. The hat in general has sort of a little bit to me of like, we're going for high fashion. We're coming for you, New York Yankees hat that's in all of the pictures of everybody of all time.
Right, right.
But, you know, for me, none of this matters. As soon as Felix Hernandez goes down while wearing these jerseys, I think you got to burn them.
Felix Bautista.
Oh my goodness. That's an embarrassing King Felix slip up. Excuse me, Baltimoreans. As soon as Felix Bautista goes down while wearing these jerseys, I think that that's it. I think that's the only straw you need. And after that moment, that you can't. Here's the thing about baseball. Once something has turned, once the emotional worm has turned, there's no way to get it back.
Yeah.
Now, as soon as Orioles fans see us wearing the City Connect jerseys, everybody's sphincter tightens, and you get a performance like today when everybody is already assuming a loss, despite the fact that our ace is pitching and we came off an 11-run stonking of Cincinnati. Everyone saw the Orioles Connect jerseys, and everyone was like, well, we're going to lose this game.
Right.
And then, lo and behold, feelings are the dominant narrative of baseball. And so we did.
It's why you had to send down, and this is going to sound like a frivolous connection, but I think anyone listening is ready for that. It's why you had to send down Jackson Holliday, which I realize stark reversal from
A to B to C
comments I made on the show previously. But the narrative had been established that he was overwhelmed, mm-hmm. that he was going to strike out every time. And all of a sudden, the at-bats didn't become about just getting an at-bat. It became about overcoming the narrative. And you can't put that on a baseball player, and you can't put that on a uniform.
Which is why we should burn Jackson Holliday. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. Well, Jackson Holliday, from what I can tell, is back to burning up baseballs in AAA. So yeah.
Got back down and had a 3-hit game and then immediately walked 4 times.
And he'll
Which
be.
Actually, if I may, if we're going to continue the emotional emotional analysis of where we are as a team. Well, okay, Baltimoreans, you know what just happened. We just had a 24-game scoreless a 24 inning scoreless streak by our starting pitchers, the likes of Cole Irvin and Dean Kramer are suddenly in contention for the Cy Young. That's fine. Right. That's totally expected normal behavior in Orioles land this year. What I want to talk about is we're talking about narrative. Talking about narrative arcs, it seems as though the narrative arc is we're going to have robot umpires. Mm. That seems to be where everyone thinks this is going.
Yep.
Are umpires getting worse as a result of that, or am I just noticing it more?
Smith, I am so glad you have pulled this spicy potato chip out of the potato chip bag. Let's chew on it. I have had the same thought.
Because
we did not coordinate this ahead of time.
Me,
and I've had the same thought.
It legitimately. So I was just realizing the other day that I'm having less fun watching baseball games in the last couple of weeks. Hmm. The Orioles are good. The Orioles are fun. And I'm enjoying it less. And I think one of the reasons that I'm enjoying it less in this last 3-week window is because I'm fixated on the fact that Gunnar fucking Henderson cannot get a call on the edge of the strike zone. Hmm. If it's just a bit outside, he's just not getting calls. And that feels like it's going up and down the Orioles lineup. I'm sure that a even statistical analysis of baseball would suggest that that it's not the Orioles are not an outlier, but I'm only consuming Orioles baseball, so I'm only seeing it through this particularly orange-colored glasses. And it really feels to me like things have gotten worse. And now, because I'm keyed into them being wrong, I'm noticing it all the time, and it's pissing me off. Like, the game today was not good. The Orioles probably deserved to lose. But I can think of 5 at-bats where a marginal call put an Orioles batter behind the curve, and then the next half an inning, the Nationals pitcher got the opposite call in the exact same point of the strike zone.
Yeah.
Are they getting worse, Sam?
I mean, it certainly feels like it is way worse this year. I didn't get to watch the game tonight, but it does feel like this year it has been.
It was bad enough that Brandon Hyde got wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like a noticeable shift this year to where you have to start wondering if there isn't some kind of coordinated thing going on amongst the umpires. And I don't actually think it's crazy to suggest that. I mean, we know from things like the NYPD that when they were mad at Bill de Blasio, when he was in office, they put in place this thing that they called the slowdown, where they were not enforcing laws as much, not making as many arrests, like not responding to calls as quickly because they were pissed off at Bill de Blasio for reasons that I don't really remember. I think ending stop and frisk, or he said something they didn't like at a police captain's funeral or something. I can't remember. But this is, it's something that, you know, organized labor has been known to do. And I'm an organized labor guy, Smith. Don't get me wrong. it is a known technique that you see sometimes where it's like imposing management structure. You're telling us how to do our jobs. We have control over how this goes. And we're going to show you that we have control over how this goes. The thing I can't figure out, though.
But isn't that just welcoming in our robot overlords all the faster?
Well, that's the thing. I don't understand why doing the job worse would be the their chosen means of making a point.
I mean, I guess that would, but to your point, that's also true of the police.
Yes. Although the police, I think the thing the police have going for them is we have the ability to make this city less safe to live in. So do you really want to mess around with this?
Look, they are making it less safe to be in that batter's box.
And less emotionally fulfilling to be a baseball fan. In your case.
Exactly.
In your case,
my psychological safety is at risk here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I don't know. It really does seem like you can see it this year. Because, you know, it's not as though the TV broadcasts just added that rectangle that shows you where the strike zone is. Like,
right.
We have been able to follow this for years at this point. And the, you know, the umpire ratings Twitter account has been active for many years. And, the uptick
and
is
I don't
real.
Remember. I mean, maybe this is also confirmation bias, but I don't remember. Like, I think it is rare. It was exceedingly rare for Kevin Brown and Jim Palmer and Ben McDonald to be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Are you sure? That feels like a big miss. And they've been getting spicy.
Yeah.
Like, they've been calling out like a lot bad calls.
Yeah. When it gets to the point that they're weighing in, you know something is going on. The thing is, I don't want robot umpires. And the thought that I have had, I mean, this has been my soapbox for a long time on this show, is, you know, I feel like it is the most human game, and umpire variance is part of the game, just like the varying distance of the left field wall at various stadiums is part of the game. The different amounts of foul territory is in different ballparks is part of the game. I like that stuff. I think it keeps things interesting. And my feeling for years, and honestly, the feeling I've tried to hold on to this year, is in the end, you're going to have as many calls that go against you as you do that break in your direction. And though it might be frustrating in the moment, it's going to get given back to you in due time.
Right.
But it does feel like that's an easier story to tell yourself when there's one, maybe two bad calls over the course of a game. And you're talking about the narrative over, you know, a week with a series with one umpiring crew, rather than there being five or six egregiously blown calls that alter the course of the game in one 9-inning stretch.
Yeah. I'm sure this is confirmation bias, but like, I'm feeling like it's happening more to the Gunnar Hendersons, the Adley Rutschmans, and even the Jackson Holidays than I want. And I think that, like, that has long-term developmental ramifications. Like, I want those dudes trusting their eye, and if their eye is right, I don't want them to get rung up. Like, I don't want them to start swinging at things that are not strikes, because that's how you get sent back to the minors, because you strike out too many times. Like, I think that there is a... There's a lot of... there's a lot at stake to me with this team, because these Orioles are good, where it feels like, you know, the psychological health. I mean, it seems like, you know, these people are very, these are professional baseball players. They're fine. They shrug this off way more effectively than I do. I realize all of that, but it does feel to me like a situation where, how to put this, like those variances are not just costing the Orioles a chance to win the baseball game. They are costing like a larger equanimity of understanding of what the rules are.
That's interesting.
And that's not fun. Like,
that's interesting. And it certainly correlates with, I mean, if there's anything that genuinely troubles me about the Orioles this year, it's that we're striking out like banditos. Like, I think Gunnar Henderson might be on pace for close to 200 strikeouts this year. Like, those are Mark Reynolds numbers. And if Couser had more at bats, I think he'd be in the same ballpark. Adley Rutschman is striking out more, which I don't like. I mean, again, if you zoom out, like, the state of the union is very strong. Adley's hitting like 318 even after he went 0-for-4 tonight. You know,
he got a hit first inning.
Oh, he got a hit first inning. Okay, great.
Yep. He's now 16 of his last 18, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a crisis. It's not like it's a crisis, and I don't want to come across as alarmist, but it is the only trend on the team this year that has raised my eyebrow a little bit, because everything else has been going so well. And this does feel related to that. I have to say, though, I think there has always been a little bit of an element, just because we were talking about Jackson Holliday and strikeouts. I do think there has always been a little bit of a, and this is silly old boys club nonsense, but there has always been a little bit of a thing when especially when a top prospect comes up, he's not going to get close calls. They're going to go against him, because I think a lot of times the umpires are like, you got to earn it, kid. You know, if you want calls to go your way, you got to earn the respect from the league and me, the umpire, by extension, that you have good judgment of what the strike zone is. Like, I think umpires have tacitly sort of played into the hazing that young prospects go through. So, and that's silly and sort of stupid, but it is also kind of one of the things that I think is weirdly fun about baseball, is there's all these secret narratives that we don't know are happening. But I do think, especially with a player like Gunnar, who is so emotional, like, he's all heart all the time, I do worry that it would be very easy for him to convince himself, like, well, I'm just not going to get these pitches called on my behalf anymore, so I just got to start swinging more. And then all of a sudden, he's in a 20-game slump. Mm-hmm. And his average down about 50 points over the last couple of weeks. So maybe there's something to that.
I think, right. So, and all of this is probably, you know, aggrandizing the fact that I'm enjoying it less. Like, I'm getting frustrated. I'm listening to a game and like, I find myself like listening to a baseball game as I'm doing the dishes, and then every time an Orioles hitter gets a called strike three, I'm going to the MLB app and like looking at where it was.
Ooh, that's not
like,
good.
I'm like,
that's not good.
It's not good. Like, I was just sitting here as you were talking, and I was thinking, like, like, going back and looking at the Ryan O'Hearn, like, this is Ryan O'Hearn's first inning. those are called, 1-6 are called strikes.
Yeah, those aren't strikes.
Those aren't strikes. And then in the ninth inning, like, So I'm gonna show you this one again. This is the one he got rung up on. That strike four, the fourth pitch which is what the one he struck out on.
Oh, come now.
Yeah, inches outside, and but I want to know, like, I want to talk about me. Where is it that I, like, what part of the attachment to the game is it to get all bent out of shape about bad umpiring? Why is that a thing that I am fixating on over, why am I able to hand wave Cole Irvin's two truly amazing starts? Dean Kramer finding ground, like double play ball after double play ball to go seven innings scoreless. Why am I not leading off the show with John fucking Allen Means pitching seven scoreless innings in his return many of us, myself included, my namesake, who is, I believe, 5 years younger, 7 years younger than me, 9 years younger than me, whatever, doesn't matter. Pitching, like, arguably one of his best games since the no-hitter. Why is that not where my brain goes as a Orioles fan? Riddle me this.
I think I'm going to speculate, and I'm probably imposing some of my own psychology on you here, so I apologize. But this is also something that we've talked about before. Alan, we need something to be wrong. We know this. We need something to be wrong. Yeah. We need doom to be lurking just around the corner. We need there to be the perfectly placed needle that's going to pop the balloon, that we need that there to be a dagger that we don't see coming. This happens. This happens every year that the Orioles are good for us.
It's true. Yeah, I think that's true. I also would say that, generally, like, as a, I think I'm still rational enough to say that I am looking across the board and seeing other fans, like the umpire adjudicator on Twitter or whatever that dude's handle is, who posts the, like, how umpires did, it's looking worse across the board.
Yes.
Like, I'm not yet at the point on my looking for things to be wrong where I feel like this is particularly bad and targeting the Orioles. But I will say that the lack of coherent, like, that it's affecting my enjoyment of the game. And, you know, even to a certain extent when the call goes on our way, like, there was that game against the Angels a couple of days ago when the guy was thrown out stealing second,
Joe Adell.
Like, he wasn't out. That doesn't feel great. Like, it doesn't make it feel like it doesn't it. The fact that it is, in fact, probably all coming out in the wash, and it is, in fact, sort of swinging one way or the other, it doesn't have to be a conspiracy targeting my Orioles for it to be materially affecting my enjoyment of the game.
But even that, Smith, I have to ask, and I'm not trying to be provocative, I'm just curious, but even that, is that not on some level that you're traumatized Oriole fan brain is still more accustomed to the Orioles blowing it in the ninth than locking it down? That's still the outcome that the wounded part of you expects. And so in a way, it would feel more comfortable for that call to go against us and for that run to score and for the Orioles to go on to lose the game. It would feel more comfortable than for fate to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably onto something here.
I mean, this is such a good illustration of why Orioles fan psychology is the exact inverse of Yankee fan psychology, right? This is why.
Right. It's the opposite of outcome the ghosts.
Yes, it is the opposite of the Orioles moved back the left field wall specifically to torment Aaron Judge, which is what those people think. Like they think that were it not for the realities of, you know, the distance between home plate,
space, time,
and the wall, they would have won that series, and that it's not, you know, it's not their fault that Oswald Cabrera, I think it was, couldn't hit it over the fence. It's fate's fault for, you know, creating a conspiracy whereby the Orioles decided to move the wall back, because their lizard brain expectation is things go our way. We catch the breaks.
Yeah.
We win.
No, I think you're right. I think that it is I think it is the expectation of doom that haunts every waking moment of an Orioles fandom that turns the what could be just a few more, like it could be a way of, you could look at the umpire chaos and think, well, the game has gotten a little bit more random.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've increased the, like, kind of the randomness of it. That's not what I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the game has gotten more slanted against my team. Because I expect that those calls matter, and I expect that were it not for those calls, were Ryan O'Hearn to have gotten on base there in the first inning as his batter's eye suggested he should, that we would have scored, and then Corbin Burnes would not have given up the run, and then we wouldn't have lost the game.
Right. And I mean, and that's what you're positing is not irrational, because we all know how much momentum matters.
It's completely irrational.
Yeah, sorry. It's irrational, but it's understandable, I guess. Because we know how much those things can affect the rhythm of a game, you know, taking our chosen loyalties out of it. But then when you add in the baseline narrative that we all share, which is that somehow we always get screwed, it makes those feelings even more intense. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, even taking this whole psychological element out of it, it does seem like something weird's going on with the umpires, and it's not just Angel Hernandez anymore.
No. CD Buckner was having a whale of a weekend.
Yeah. The other thing, and this is just pure anecdotal speculation, but the other thing I do feel like I'm seeing in the games I get to watch more is not just that the quality of the umpires' calls at home plate has gone down, but they are hesitating longer before they call strikes or before they call called third strikes.
Mm.
And I almost wonder if there's not something in their heads that's like, we're getting more scrutiny than ever before. Am I really sure that was a strike? No, God damn it. I'm an umpire. Just call it a strike. I'm wearing the blue. I'm wearing the blue suit. I'm wearing the chest protector. I'm wearing the mask.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows?
No, I think that all of these, I think that where we started is where we will end this particular part of the podcast. It's all about narrative.
It is.
And if the narrative has twisted against you such that you think that the next thing is that you will be out of a job, or at least out of the version of the job that you currently know and do, because I don't think they can't take umpires out of the game entirely, but they might have robot umps for balls and strikes, or maybe they'll just do the challenge thing. I could kind of get behind the one challenge a game robot, like, I think that that's what they're trying in a couple AAA games. Is that right?
I think that's true, that you would get a challenge on balls and strikes the same way you get challenges on other plays. I don't know, man. I mean, it does seem random to me that you can challenge, you know, a call of safer out at second base, but you can't challenge a ball and strike call. It's not like we can't use video cameras to evaluate how correct one was and not the other. And in fact, it's easier to evaluate whether something was a ball or strike than it is on a bang bang play, you know, at second base. So it does seem a little bit like that is a nod to, it's kind of a sanctimonious, like, well, you are the great and vaunted umpires and we won't infringe that far on your influence on the game. It's like, if you're gonna have challenges, just let managers challenge everything. In a way, it feels like maybe we wouldn't be in this situation if they had just done that from the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, and speaking as someone who also, as is probably well known to many Baltimoreans, I also have watched video-assisted refereeing, VAR, in European football, and boy, that has not worked. Like, there are more problems there than there are solutions. Like there's an interesting psychological thing happening, I think, right now with Major League, or like the Premier League umps, where because they know that there's a video assistant out there, they're less prone to call things. They're like, well, if I get this wrong, then someone will correct me. But the way the video assisted referee is supposed to do it is by saying only a clear and obvious error. Do we then phone down? So you're left in this interesting space of fewer calls, and then, but it's not egregious. They're all judgment calls anyway. So everyone is double and triple thinking themselves. It's the same situation. People are not going with
the
speed and the gut, because the video has been deployed but not been deployed effectively. And then you get these weird moments where, like, guys are standing around for 5, 7, 8 minutes.
That's extreme. Yeah,
that's extreme. But it has happened,
right?
And like doing nothing, waiting for people to like draw a line and see if some guy's big toe was molecules off sides on the build-up play, you know.
Right. Well, and if you start doing that in baseball, then there goes your whole pace of play innovation stuff. You lose all the time you made back with the pitch clock if you let this go too far. But
yeah, so it has to be a robot standing in the wings, and it has to be something where the umpire can immediately like turn to the robot. The robot says, "Yes, you're right. No, you're wrong." Bing, bang, boom. It has to be quick and seamless and unimpeachable, and it has to be, or else we got nothing.
I mean, the thing I do like about the challenge system that we do have is that there is some game theory to it, which is that you know that if you're a manager, you should only use the challenge if you really think there's a clear shot at winning, because then you're going to lose it. And so the managers picking their spots.
And that in turn would, with a limited number of it, that in turn would, in theory, get you to the egregious ones and not the, borderline ones.
Yeah. And maybe that has the downstream psychological effect of the umpires not doing whatever it is they're doing right now, and either overcorrecting or undercorrecting or whatever it is that's happening, because
whatever weird mind games they're playing, maybe it stops them from being on strike. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe you could do something, if you do want to preserve the sanctity of the ball strike call, maybe you could do something where, like, if you challenge a called third strike and you lose, maybe there's a steeper penalty. Maybe you can't then challenge a play for two games or something like that. Like, there are fun, we could make this fun instead of annoying.
Yeah. And we can make it another thing where sort of the manager is sort of watching the game and gets to do something other than just run out there and get tossed.
Yeah.
Like, that's not very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, now it results in this situation where, like, nobody wants to say anything when nobody wants to get into a fight when the calls are bad, because you risk the ejection and the ejection screws everything up. So the umpires are kind of operating with impunity. And then eventually in a situation like tonight, the manager comes out and says something, but he's like, well, there's two outs in the ninth inning already. I might as well, just to, I don't know, for narrative reasons, to show that I complained. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? What is happening?
I gotta say, I was thrilled that he did it. I was like, all right, you should have been up there in the third, but that's great.
yeah. Well, riddle me this, Smith. I mean, tonight's loss aside, we have been on a pretty extraordinary run and have gotten ourselves in a situation where we're in the conversation with the about who are the top five teams in the league. We're definitively on that list by, it seems like, pretty universal
going
judgment.
Into today, we were on 109 win pace.
Yeah. So all kidding aside, is there anything that you look at in the current makeup of the team or the way it's been playing that gives you pause? Or do you think it's just a question of whether or not we can beat the Phillies or beat the Braves or beat the Dodgers?
I'm still worried about the bullpen. I think that the fact that it worked to put our guys randomly into the high leverage situations in a sort of piecemeal way against the Yankees and Cincinnati should not suggest that that is a long-term strategy for success. I think that I am suddenly not so worried about our starting pitching, because it seems like we had been sort of talking about, as long as we get one of Means and Bradish back at 90% of where they were at their prime, then we're going to be okay. And then both of them came back and looked like vintage. I mean, like,
and against good teams,
straight back
against good
against
teams,
good teams, against good teams, against good lineups. And yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know if you've seen the statistic, but we have the best record, against teams over 500 of anybody in the majors. So I think, you know, bats go cold, bats go hot. Yeah. Like we are more likely to put up 11 runs tomorrow than we are to put up another goose egg.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. I think there's a lot of talent. I wish we were playing Kirkstad a little bit more. I think he's proven that he can hit everything that needs to be hit in AAA. So I wish we'd use him since we have him up. I have a few critiques about, you know, the location that Mateo is popping up in the lineup, but right now he's hitting, so what the hell?
Yeah.
I don't think he should ever be as high as sixth, but that's another here nor there.
It's very high. It's very high.
I'm a little worried about Mullins. I think we may end up with a strict platoon with him and Hayes when Hayes comes back. Like, I think Mullins against left-handers has been pretty hard to watch. But, you know, the bullpen, that's the only thing that I think, like, I'm really worried about. I'm hoping that the six starting pitchers that we have suddenly really does mean that some of those other arms, your Tyler Wells's, I guess not Cole Irving. I guess you can't really kick him out of the lineup right now.
Well, I mean, this is a fascinating thing. Like, it's got to be either...
Your Al Suarez's.
Yeah.
Your Al Suarez's.
But one of these guys is going to have to go to the pen when Grayson comes back. I mean, there's... Unless we're going to go with a six-man rotation, which...
Which we're not going to do.
Hyde has said we're not going to do that. So I think it's great, the amount of pressure that's being exerted on the Kramers and Irvins of the world to pitch at the absolute top of their ability. I think it definitely has to do with the fact that they know that that spot is not guaranteed. But it is going to be really... I think probably Irvin ends up in the bullpen. If
he's got to give up a run first.
If current trends hold. I will say the thing I'm worried about is Kimbrel. I think the...
Yes.
The way that not having a closer, period, like take Kimbrel out of it for a second, the way that not having a true closer destabilizes a bullpen is just... It can create all kinds of problems. And I know there are some teams that have made it work with the closer by committee thing, but that's not a long list. And it's very clear that Kimbrel can't pitch high leverage on consecutive days. He can't do it. And we don't have a true closer outside of him unless it's one of these guys, then we just don't know about it yet, but they're all too valuable in other roles to experiment with them as a closer. And if we move one of them to closer, then somebody else has to become the, I don't know, Danny Coulomb or CNL Perez or whoever it is that steps into that role. And as you were just pointing out, we don't necessarily have that guy. So yeah. I think something needs to happen there. I think a trade needs to be made. Like, we need a closer. And I know that we have a closer. He's just hurt. It's not like this is an organizational failure, but we need somebody whose job it is to slam the door, who we can be reasonably confident is going to slam the door.
Do you think it would be acceptable to do the closer by committee in the way of, if Kimbrel is on more than one day rest, it's him, and otherwise it's X?
Maybe. I just feel like that,
like,
gets...
Can you do 1A and 1B?
Yeah, and I mean, it sort of seems like that's the way it's going. Like, the other night when Kimbrel clearly didn't have it, Hyde brought in Cano.
Yeah, but then the other night he brought in Webb, and then the other, like, right now that 1B is like six people.
Yeah. I don't know. It just...
I guess I wonder, like, could it be a little more... like a little more fluid if it wasn't, yeah. If it was just very clear what was happening and who the other person was and who the...
I mean, we'll see. I think
B guy.
I think that's what it's going to have to be. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it's going to have to be if this is going to work. Because like we have seen, that Kimbrel is not up to the challenge. And it's very sad because he's had a wonderful career and he seems like a great competitor and all those things, but he just doesn't have it in the tank anymore.
Can I interest you in a slightly used Kyle Stowers? What could we get for
closer?
Him on the reliever? as a trade bait.
Oh.
For who he just hit his 70 bajillionth AAA home run tonight.
I mean,
he is a quad A ball player. Yeah. And Joey Ortiz is killing it elsewhere, and mm-hmm. you know, like, these guys are good. They're just behind people who are better.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing because, you know, like, it's not like there are ever any real sure things when it comes to closers. Like, the only person during the offseason that I would have said, yeah, I'm very happy that we made that signing, that person can close, is Josh Hader, and he's been terrible this year. So it's not like I think we messed up, but...
Yeah, I agree.
We do need an
answer. But where we are in the season, we need to make a move for somebody.
Something's got to happen. And... you know, talk about how nothing means anything anymore in baseball. If the Padres can trade for Arraez in early May, then let's trade for, I don't know, David Robertson. Like, let's do something here.
Yeah. Yeah. Hunter Harvey looked pretty good against us tonight.
I'd take Hunter Harvey. He was ours first.
Hit 100 a couple huns. Hit a couple of hundred times.
He is an Oriole by bloodline.
By bloodline. I will say this, and this is an idea, actually, that I have to give credit to the Honorable Judge Markovich for putting in my brain. But whereas at this time last year or in previous seasons, when someone dots 101 on the radar gun, I was like, ooh, wow, that's fast. Now I think, oh God, please stop. Please stop.
You have a limited number of those, young man.
It's like, it's the equivalent of the old football highlights of people going over the middle and getting their bell cleaned out for them,
right,
by a raging linebacker, which at some point in our lives was considered the highlight of the game, and now is just like, you can't see it and not think long-term brain trauma.
Yeah.
I was so disappointed to watch Hunter Harvey crank it up to 101 today and think, oh no, stop, please, please stop.
Yeah. I get nervous when Dean Kramer touches 95. You know,
Dean Kramer looks like he's working harder than anybody else in baseball. He's like, he's the hardest working man in showbiz. Like he's panting.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. He's grimacing. Uh-huh. He's licking his fingers. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's having a terrible time.
Yeah. Talk about something that makes me nervous to watch. Like you're talking about with the umpires, like Dean Kramer will do this thing where like he'll throw a pitch and it won't go where he wants to go. And he'll shake his hand. Like he'll wring it out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did you just hurt yourself? And it's just like a nervous tick.
And he'll look at the pads on his fingers as if like he just like popped a blister or something.
Like, Dean, you know these games are televised.
It's very unpleasant to watch.
We are paying attention, buddy.
Oh, dear.
But we must say, Smith, we must say that but for these things that we have been talking about as though they are crises... Even with tonight's loss, we remain at the top of the heap in the American League East with a very talented roster, and that should not go unappreciated.
I have one major question for you before we finish up this evening.
Okay.
Sam, what would you call... former Orioles journeyman and I would say dark horse fan favorite Henry Urrutia if he had starred for the no longer extant Buffalo Braves in the NBA.
Oh, God.
As a professional basketball player and then player coach.
You know I'm not going to get this one. I didn't even know there were Buffalo Braves. I didn't know there was a basketball team in Buffalo ever. I didn't know there was ever a basketball team called the Braves. I'm still going to make a guess.
Sure, sure.
I would say you would call him Lenny Fingers O'Toole Urrutia. Just because I think it would have been
not bad
if there was a basketball player named Lenny Fingers O'Toole.
Well, you would call him Henry McAdoo Urrutia.
Of course, the
Bob McAdoo Urrutia. Bob McAdoo Urrutia.
Well, the general rule with Urrutia is Maca don't. So we'll talk to you next time, Baltimoreans.
Baltimoreans.